on the table.
Sure.
All right. I guess we'll get started. It'll be a chavura for now, and hopefully people will trickle in. What I really wanted to, what I really wanted to address was the question of where does Tainus Esther come from? What are we doing on Tainus Esther? So the first time I asked someone that question, someone asked me, what are we going to talk about this evening? I said, where does Tainus Esther come from? And he responded to me, well, I don't understand the question. What do you mean, where does it come from? It's Furosh Pasuk in Megillas Esther, right? Yes. So that's the hello.
I was hoping you'd have hot chocolate.
That would have been a good idea. We'd have, we'd have 50 people. That's the common response to the question of this evening, which is where does Tainus Esther come from? What do you mean, where does Tainus Esther come from? It's Mefurish in Megillas Esther. So the answer is that it's, in fact, it's if a person looks at the Psukim in Megillas Esther, in fact, it's not Mefurish in Megillas Esther. So let's see, what do we mean? There are two times in Megillas Esther where fasting is referenced. Both times, it is in connection with, obviously, the threat posed to the Jewish people by Haman's decree. So just take a look, and we're going to have to figure out how to date everything, all the fasts referred to in Megillas Esther. Because the assumption that my friend made was that, well, there must be a reference to a fast on the 13th of Adar prior to a celebration on the 14th and 15th that's mentioned in Esther. There must be something like that. So the answer is that I don't think it's so simple. Take a look at that.
Your question is exactly, is it the day that's designated, or is it just designated in general?
So is there some notion that on the 13th of Adar, Esther fasted for a day, and we are commemorating that fast. Is there such a fast in Megillas
Esther?
That's
different than saying...
where does Tainus Esther come from? Right. True.
But that's assuming that we do agree that there was a fast in Paul.
Right. So the question... So let's that's a good point. Let's flesh out the question. We, in observing Tainus Esther, fast on the 13th of Adar. Presumably, we call it Tainus Esther in commemoration of the fast that Esther observed. So my question is this. Is there a fast in Megillas Esther that occurs on the 13th of Adar? And if there isn't, what are we doing on the 13th of Adar? That's question number one. Number two, assuming that Esther did fast whenever she did fast, so did she fast for one day? Or perhaps, did she fast for more than one day? So we're going to have to locate Tainus Esther that we observe on somewhere in Megillas Esther. And if we can't do that, we're going to have to ask ourselves when, in fact, we might ask ourselves after that, did at least Chazal think that Tainus Esther occurred on the date that we observe it? And if we can't find Tainus Esther in Chazal, either in the Tanaitic literature or in the Amoraic literature in the Talmud, we're really going to have to ask ourselves, when did Tainus Esther start? What's the earliest source that we can find for Tainus Esther? So I'm somewhat prejudicing the discussion, but let's take a look at the sources in Megillas Esther so that we can be well-informed about what's going on. Let's take a look at source number one. Source number one from Paragimel 3:12, the Pasuk tells us, V'yikara'u soferei ha-melech b'chodesh ha-rishon, b'shlosha asar yom bo, v'yikasev k'chol asher tziva Haman. The king's scribes called forth after Haman had had his conversation with Achashverosh, establishing the legality of the decree against the Jewish people, that he had the scribes of the king come to the apartment, come to the palace, and write out the decree. And what day was it? The Pasuk tells us. The Pasuk tells us that it was B'chodesh HaRishon, which is what month? Nisan, right? It was B'chodesh HaRishon, B'shlosha Asar Yom Bo, on the 13th day of Nisan. The 13th day of Nisan was the day that the decree was sent out. Now, take a look at Esther 4:3. So subsequent to this decree being published, there is a fast. Everywhere that the word of the decree reached, there was mourning, and there was crying, and there was fasting, and so on and so forth. So this presumably was in Nisan, or shortly thereafter. Perhaps in Iyar, perhaps in Sivan, whenever it was, there was fasting. So this is the first fast that's referenced in the Megillah. There is a fast that is in response to the decrees of Haman, but it doesn't take place in Adar, let alone on the 13th of Adar. It takes place, most likely, in Nisan. So that's fast number one. Fast number two, take a look at Esther 4:16, which you have just to the right of that, in source number one. Leich kenosis kol yehudim animtzaim b'shushan, v'tzuma alai v'al tochlu v'al tishtu, shaloshes yamim laila v'yom, gam ani v'nai rasayat zemkein, v'chein avo al ha-melech, asher lo chadas, v'chasher avadati, avadti. Esther tells Mordechai, gather up all the Jewish people that are in Shushan and fast for me. Don't eat, don't drink. For 3 days you're going to fast. And then I'm going to go approach the king. Now, when does Esther... Now, there are two questions that we have to ask her. Number one, is this possibly a source for the practice of fasting on the 13th of Adar, which we call Tainus Esther? Is this perhaps the source? It seems like an obvious locus. In other words, Esther here tells everybody to fast. And when does everybody fast? So in terms of how, so the Megillah doesn't provide us with the date, but Chazal thought that that it was clear what day this was. So at the very least, if we're not going to locate it, our date in the Megillah, we can locate it in Chazal. So take a look at that Seder Olam Rabbah at the very bottom. Seder Olam Rabbah is the magnum opus of rabbinic chronography. It was compiled, it sort of includes material that is from the Second Temple period, but was most likely redacted just before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, sometime, I'd say, in the late 1st century, or perhaps just after, rather, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, in the sort of late 1st century CE, maybe early 2nd century of the Common Era. And in Seder Olam Rabbah, we are told, B'chamisha asar b'nisan nichnasa Esther lefnei ha-melech, b'shisha asar b'nisan talu as haman al ha-etz. On the 15th day, Esther went in to meet Ahasuerus, on the 15th day of Nisan, and on the 16th, Haman was hanged. Which means that what? When did Esther fast?
3 days.
3 days before the 15th of Nisan. So in other words, 13th, 14th, 15th of Nisan.
Right, Pesach.
Pesach, right. Exactly. And how do we know this? How do we know the Chazal were aware of this? Because the Gemara says, the Bavli tells us in Pesachim, that Mordechai was hevir yom rishon shel Pesach b'tainis. That Mordechai was guilty of fasting on the very first day of Yontif, which presumably is prohibited. So the two sources that we have in Megillas Esther for fasting seem to be completely unrelated to our practice of fasting on Tainus Esther. Why? Because we have one fast that, although it seems to occur, I mean, it's unclear how long it occurs, but let's assume that the first fast in 4-3 occurs for 1 day. The problem is it doesn't occur in Adar, let alone on the 13th of Adar.
Well, couldn't you just say that, you know, first of all, you couldn't fast on Pesach, and to be somewhat lenace, you just moved it so that you would have the Tainus and the Chag, you know, whenever we're celebrating the Chag.
So why wouldn't we have it in ER? Right, because presumably in 4-3, the Jews were fasting, meaning they fasted whenever they heard the news. So let's say it took, you know, a couple of weeks for the messengers of the king to reach the people. So if they didn't hear, in other words...
But if the nace is in Adar, then you're going to be somech the nace to the Tainus.
So
if Purim actually happens in Adar, then you have the fast right before Adar. So you've got the down of the fast,
right,
and then the up. Of Purim.
But then, seemingly, we would lose all connection to the biblical fasts. In other words, the biblical fasts, the fasts that are in Esther, are not Samach L'Nes.
Correct.
So why would we try to make the fast Samach L'Nes if we're trying to imitate a biblical model? Now, this is further complicated by the fact that Esther's fasts for how many days? Three. Why are we fasting for 1 day? And in fact, although there's no hint, and this is a crucial point, we'll come back to this in a moment, there's no hint of any Tainus on the 13th of Adar, let alone a fast called Tainus Esther, in any of the rabbinic literature in the Talmudic period. At the very least, however, there is an Israeli minhag, an Eretz Yisrael-based minhag, that appears in Masechet Sofrim. Masechet Sofrim is one of the minor tractates of the Talmud Bavli. It was probably composed in the 8th to 9th century. The second half of it was composed in about the 10th century in either Italy or Byzantium. And it reflects the minhagim, sort of a combination, a weird combination of the minhagim of Bavel and of Eretz Yisrael. And one of the minhagim that it records and it ascribes to the sages of Eretz Yisrael is as follows. Take a look in source number two. Shloshes yimei hatzom ein mesanen otzo resufin el aprudim sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. The three fast days that people are accustomed to fast, some people still have this custom, you should fast them, not together, but Monday, Thursday, and Monday. And this is the key point, that's not as important. The key point is, V'raboseinu sheb'eretz Yisrael nahagu lehis'anos achar yimei hapurim b'pnei nika nor v'chaveira v'od sh'me'achar b'puranos v'ein magdimin. The rabbis of Eretz Yisrael, the source says, were accustomed to fast after the days of Purim because of Nicanor and his cohorts, and also because punishments are postponed and not advanced. So let's set off those last two clauses about Nicanor and about punishments. Let's bracket that for a moment. First of all, it's clear that there was a practice that originated seemingly in Eretz Yisrael to fast for 3 days in commemoration of what Esther did. Monday, Thursday, and Monday. There was a 3-day fasting period.
But is that different from the regular Bahag fasts that you have after Shalosh
Rabbah? So the answer is no. Generally, this minhag seems to have been superimposed onto the Bahag fasts. The Bahag fasts is the practice that is attested, at least in Eretz Yisrael, of fasting, of having sort of a series of fasts that you engage in every Monday, Thursday, and then the following Monday. Just as an act of inoy, as an act of asceticism. So superimposed upon that general practice, just after Purim, seems to have been the practice of fasting 3 times for 3 days, Monday, Thursday, and the subsequent Monday, in commemoration of the three fasts, the 3 days that Esther and Mordechai and the Jews of Shushan fasted. So at the very least, we can see that if you really wanted to model a fast on Esther's precedent, this is basically what you would do. You fast for 3 days. And moreover, you wouldn't fast before Purim, you would fast sometime after Purim. Now, preferably, if you wanted to really parallel, or if you really wanted to take seriously the precedent of the minhag set for us, or rather of the verses in Megillas Esther, what day would you, or rather, what and what month would you fast? You would fast in Nisan. Why? Because that's when Esther fasted. Esther fasted according to Seder Olam Rabbah. Esther fasted, which we saw just a second ago. Esther fasted on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of Nisan. So if you wanted to really take that precedent seriously, you would fast 3 times in Nisan. Now, Masechet Sofrim explains why the sages of Eretz Yisrael did not do that. And what does it say? It gives 2 reasons. They fasted after the days of Purim, because of Nicanor, and because punishments are postponed and not advanced. In other words, we want to push off the fasting from before Purim to after Purim, but not to Nisan, for 2 reasons. 1, because of Nicanor, and 2, because we'd rather not have a fast before Purim, we'd rather have it sometime after Purim, just not in Nisan. So why it's not in Nisan is not as important. Now, what is important, I'd like to focus on, is Nicanor. What is Nicanor?
Before you get there, why is the assumption that you should fast after Purim?
Why fast after Purim? So the answer is because there is a problem with fasting before Purim, which we're going to just explore in just a moment. So the question is why were people fasting after Purim when they did and not before Purim or in Nisan? So the answer is in Nisan there's a general problem of fasting. That's what the second clause relates to. But what I'd like to focus on is what is this reference to Nicanor? Who is Nicanor? So the answer is, take a look at source number 3. I don't expect anyone to know this offhand. Nicanor, we actually mentioned, maybe we didn't mention him. I believe we mentioned him 2 semesters ago. But for those who don't recall, and if we didn't, then no one will recall. But either way, Nicanor was a Syrian general. He was one of Antiochus's, or rather his successor's, general, who's part of the story, or rather part of the aftermath of the Hanukkah story. The Hanukkah story takes place in 164 BCE, when Yehuda Maccabee and his forces retake the temple, purify it, and so on and so forth. After that, however, they're still engaged in hostilities with the Syrian Hellenistic forces. One of the generals who attempts to destroy all that the Maccabees had built is Nicanor. So take a look at source number 3, and this is crucial.
I think I mentioned
Nicanor. So take a look at source number 2. This is from the book of 2 Maccabees. It appears in 1 Maccabees as well and in Josephus, but insofar as I believe 2 Maccabees is the earliest of those 3 sources, we'll take a look at what he says. So he writes, everyone there looked up to heaven and praised the Lord who had revealed his power and had kept his temple from being defiled. So Nicanor had fought this battle, and Yehuda Maccabee had defeated him and executed him. And then the verse tells us, Judas hung Nicanor's head from the wall of the fort as a clear proof to everyone of the Lord's help. So he sort of displayed the head of Nicanor just to show everybody of the battle that the Maccabees had won. By unanimous vote, and this is the key point, by unanimous vote, it was decided that this day would never be forgotten, but would be celebrated each year on the eve of Mordechai's day, which is the 13th day of the 12th month, called Adar in Aramaic. So, on the eve of Mordechai's day is Purim, so in other words, on the 13th of Adar, in celebration of the fact that Nicanor was defeated, we had a holiday. A holiday. So clearly at this point, there's no fasting going on the 13th of Adar. There's no Tainus Esther, because then you can never have a Chag. And in fact, it's not just, we don't just have this source for us in 2 Maccabees and in Josephus and in 1 Maccabees. It's codified for us in what is apparently a halachic source, which is Megillas Tainus. Megillas Tainus is a, when you take a look to the right, you'll see what we have. Megillas Tainus is a, basically, a short collection of days upon which it is prohibited to fast because of, for whatever reason. It doesn't supply any of the reasons. There are commentaries in Megillas Tainus that tried to supply the reasons, some successfully, others not. But it's clear that Megillas Tainus and the holidays that it preserves, upon which fasting and in some cases eulogizing was prohibited, was seen to be for many generations authoritative by the rabbis. At a certain point over the course of the period of the Babylonian Talmud and the Talmud Yerushalmi, Megillas Tainus begins to be either ignored or marginalized, and at a certain point, its holidays become nullified. However, for much of the rabbinic period, it was in fact held in force. Now, one of the holidays that it mentions upon which fasting is prohibited is B'tlas Asar Bey on the 13th of it, namely of Adar, Nicanor, is Nicanor's day. So now we have a problem. How can we have Tainus Esther on the 13th of Adar if the 13th of Adar is also Nicanor's day? So now here the problem seems to me as follows. We can't locate Tainus Esther in Megillas Esther itself. We also can't locate Tainus Esther in the Hasmonean period, in the Hellenistic period, probably not for much of the rabbinic period. I'll clue you in, there's no reference to Tainus Esther to a source, to a fast on the 13th of Adar at any point in the Talmudic literature. So now, we're stuck. In other words, if we want to find Tainus Esther, the practice of fasting on the 13th of Adar, how far do we have to look? How far through history do we have to look?
It doesn't say anything about it in the Gemara.
So. Gemara doesn't say a word. Gemara doesn't say a word. So, take a look at source number 4. Make sure the recording is still going here. So take a look at source number 4. Source number 4 is probably the earliest reference to a normative, contemporaneous custom of fasting on the 13th of Adar. And that is from a tshuva of Rav Natronai Gaon. Rav Natronai Gaon was one of the Gaonim, of the great Babylonian academies, who was the Gaon of Sura in the mid to late 9th century, I believe from 857 to 869, I believe. But in any event, in one of his tshuvos, yeah, you can check, Wikipedia may have it, but our Jewish virtual library, all the up-to-date information is available. So Rav Natronai Gaon writes in a tshuva as follows. He's responding to a question. Someone had asked him what the Torah reading was for fast days, for public fast days. And he responds with the following list. Kach minag b'yeshiva v'lefnei nasi, k'sheyoshvin lefanav rosh yeshivos, v'chach meshtei yeshivos. This is the custom in the academy, before the exilarch, the head of all of the Jews, of the Jewish community in the exile. So this was the custom. When the heads of the academy and the sages, the two major academies of Sura and Pumbedisa, sit before him, B'tainio shel achar Shabbos shel regel, v'chein b'chol tainios, v'ein b'tainis purim, v'ein shachris b'mincha, korin b'v'yechal moshechutz mitishavav. Whether on the fast days after the Shabbos shel regel, or the Shabbos shel regel was the Shabbos, usually probably in Parshas Lech Lecha, when the Jews would sort of have this annual Shabbaton, where they would all come and honor the exilarch, so it was sort of like sort of this annual party that everybody would have, and then they would have a fast after the Shabbos Shel Regel. Later sources attempt to explain because people would be engaged in revelry of the sort that would require people to repent afterwards. So they would have this, they would have the Shabbos Shel Regel, and then they would have this fast. So in any event, that fast Or on all the other fast days, and among the fast days he numbers Ta'anis Purim. He doesn't call it Ta'anis Esther, he calls it Ta'anis Purim. But clearly there's a fast that takes place before Purim, and this is one of the fasts that Rav Nachmanai Gaon sort of takes for granted. So in other words, at this point, it's clear that there are people observing what will eventually, and there are other sources that refer to this Ta'anis Purim as being on the 13th of Adar. So already in the Gaonic period, at the very least in the late 9th century, we can identify a practice of fasting on the 13th of Adar prior to Purim, and we have a record of it being referred to as either Ta'anis Purim or eventually, about 100 or 200 years later, Ta'anis Esther.
Does the
Mishnah doesn't say a word. Ah, but, good point. In other words, what does the Mishnah mention in the context of the 13th of Adar? In other words, how does the Mishnah refers to the 13th of Adar, but what is its legislation with respect to that day? Okay, good point, good question. We're going to get to that in just a second. So take a look at source number 5, which is the Mishnah. So now the question is this, how do we get, but before we address the Mishnah, that we have to frame the question, I think, in a methodologically precise fashion, and that is, how do we get from no fast on the 13th of Adar at all, in other words, three fasts that Esther Malka observes, and fasts that the Jews observe all in Nisan, and the 13th of Adar being, in fact, a holiday upon which fasting is prohibited, all the way down to the late 9th century in the Gaonic period, where we have a recognized fast referred to as Ta'anis Purim or Ta'anis Esther. How do we bridge that gap? I would argue that the missing link, and this has been proposed by a fellow, he actually lives in Teaneck. He's sort of an amateur Gaonica scholar. So he was the first to identify this Midrash Tanchuma as the missing link. And I think it's worth exploring as a matter of just sound methodology. Midrash Tanchuma, some of you may be aware, it's just basically a Midrash Agada. Included within Midrash Tanchuma, however, scholars have long identified are Gaonic Tshuvos. In other words, Gaonic responses that have just sort of been somehow shtupped into the Midrash Tanchuma. And these Tshuvos generally date from the late 8th century to early 9th century. So about 100 years before Rav Nachmanai Gaon. So 100 years before Rav Nachmanai Gaon, we have a Tshuva that comments on the following Mishnah. So we're going to quickly, and it gives it a very strange interpretation that I think supplies us somewhat of a hint as to how Ta'anis Esther develops. So before we unravel the tshuva, before we explore the tshuva, we're going to take a look at the Mishnah so that we can establish the simple meaning of the Mishnah, so that we can appreciate the strange twist that the Midrash Tanchuma, that the responsum in the Midrash Tanchuma applies to the Mishnah. So take a look in source number 5. I've given you the Mishnah, I've given you a short piece of Bavli on the Mishnah, then we'll do the Tanchuma. The Mishnah is the first Mishnah in Maseches Megillah, and it's dealing with the following issue. At the very beginning of Maseches Megillah, the first thing that the Mishnah addresses is, when do we read the Megillah? On what days do we read the Megillah? So the Mishnah says that there are 5 possible days upon which we can read the Megillah. The Mishnah says, Megillah nikreis b'achadasar, b'shneimasar, b'shloshasar, b'arba'asar, b'chamishasar, lo pachos v'lo yoser. There are 5 possible days upon which the Megillah can be read in a permissible fashion. The 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th of Adar. And this is the rule for upon which of those days the Megillah is read. The Mishnah, and I'll explain how the formula works as follows. But the Mishnah says, "Krachen hamukafen choma mimos Yoshua ben Nun, koren b'chamisha asar." If you're a walled city, this we all are familiar with. If you are a walled city from the days of Yoshua ben Nun, then you read as in imitation of the Jews of Shushan. Then you read the Megillah always, without exception, on the 15th day of Adar, Shushan Purim. Kfarim va'ayaros gedolos, if, however, you are a citizen of a village or a large city, koren ba'abasar, then you always read on regular Purim on the 14th day, which is our practice. Ela, however, except, shahakfarim makdimin liyom haknisa. If you live in a small village, you have special license to advance the reading of the Megillah to Yom HaKnisa. Now, we're going to have to define what Yom HaKnisa means, but basically the issue is this. Yom HaKnisa, so actually let's take a look at what Yom HaKnisa is. Take a look at the Bavli. Yom HaKnisa is a day of gathering. Now, what does it mean, a day of gathering? What does a day of gathering refer to? So the Bavli makes clear And already, two Mishnayos later, I haven't given you this one, but two Mishnayos later, the Mishnah clarifies that the Yom HaKnisa, the Day of Gathering, took place b'sheni uvachamishi, on Mondays and Thursdays. And what was it? So the Bavli clarifies, Ela shehakfarim makdimin liyom HaKnisa, Amar Rav Chanina, Chachamim hekelu al hakfarim liyos makdimin liyom HaKnisa, kidei sheyisapku mayim umazon lachayim shebekrachin. Rav Chanina said, the rabbis were lenient with the villages in allowing them to advance the Megillah reading to Yom HaKnisa so that they should provide enough drink and food for their brethren in the city. So what becomes clear is that the Yom HaKnisa is a day, Monday or Thursday, when the people of the villages would come to the cities and bring food or bring food and drink with them. Now, why might they do that on a regular basis every Monday and Thursday? Market day, exactly. It was a market day. So in other words, in order to make sure that on market day, that on the days before market day, the villagers who were providing food for the cities were making sure to be busy with agriculture and with...
But is it just Megillah they're talking about, or they're talking about celebrating Purim? Because if it's celebrating Purim, then first of all, for Megillah you need a minyan.
Right.
Okay, and they got a minyan to read the Megillah, and they have the food to have a Suda, and that's why they're doing it, so that you can have food, a minyan, and a Suda.
So in other words, that might be part of it. The idea seems to be, though, that we want to make sure. And by the way, we should note that it's not we shouldn't take for granted that each one of these kfarim, each one of these villages, had a minyan, had a local minyan. In other words, it might have been possible that we want to allow them to come in on the Yom HaKnisa, on the market day, so that they will be assured of having a minyan. So the idea is what we do is for the villagers, we allow them to, even though normally you're right, even though normally we want them to participate with everybody on the 14th and have food and drink and a suda at the same time, what we do is if Purim falls on a day other than the market day, if the 14th, in other words, falls on a day other than the market day, we allow them to go back to the last market day, either the previous Monday or the previous Thursday, whichever is closer, and read the Megillah on that day. So it comes out that a person can technically, permissibly, read the Megillah as far back as the 11th. If, let's say, the 14th falls out on Sunday, so you go back to the previous market day, which is the last Thursday. The last Thursday would therefore be the 11th. You can read permissibly on the 11th. So that is the pshat of the Mishnah. Right? That's pshat in the Mishnah. Yom HaKnisa is market day, and what the Mishnah is discussing is the permissibility of advancing the reading of the Megillah to the previous market day to allow the villagers to bring food in on the other days. Okay. So the two, there are Rishonim who assume that the two are connected. That might even be the pshat. In fact, it seems likely if, as Ira points out, is right to focus on the idea of there perhaps not being a minyan in these villages, then that might very well be connected. In other words, everybody wants to be part of the communal practice of reading the Torah. You need a minyan for that, so you go to the villages on Monday and Thursday. The two might very well be connected. So now, what we have is a definition of the phrase Yom HaKnisa that fits with the simple reading of the Mishnah. Now, the Midrash Tanchuma, which in our case is basically a Gaonic responsa, records the following interpretation of the Mishnah. It's responding to a question that actually has nothing to, that really, technically speaking, has nothing to do with what it ends up concluding, which in and of itself is interesting. But let's take a look at what the responsa says. Uma Yom HaKnisa, so the responsa tries to define what Yom HaKnisa is. And it says, Yom HaKehila. It is the day of the congregation. This is actually, as we'll see in just a moment, this is a direct reference to a pasuk in Megillas Esther that the responsum is interpreting in a manner that does not, I think, reflect the simple meaning of the verse. The Amar, but leaving that aside for just 20 seconds, the Amar Mar, Shlosha Asar Yom Kehila Lakoli. The Bavli records a tradition that the 13th day of Adar is a day of congregating. It's a reference to this market day holiday, or rather occurrence, but the connection is not as important now. But in any event, Dichtiv, the Gaon says Yom HaKnisa is a reflection of the following verse in Megillas Esther, namely Uvishnei Masar Chodesh Uchodesh Adar B'Shlosha Asar Yom Bo Nikhalu Hayudim Ba'arehem. On the 12th day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, namely on the 13th of Adar, the Jews gathered together in their cities. Now, the assumption here that the Gaon makes is Nikhalu v'gazru tainis b'shal sha'asa ba'adar. They gathered together so that they could fast together. And that's what they did on the 13th of Adar. Now, in fact, what did they do? For those of you who remember your Megillas Esther, what did they really do on the 13th of Adar? They gathered together to fight. They were preparing to fight. That's what they did all day. They fought, and then they won. On the 14th, they were victorious. In Shushan, they weren't victorious until the 15th. So Nikhalu HaYehudim means they gathered together in strength as an army. They weren't gathering together for ritual purposes, for cultic purposes. They were gathering together in order to fight. Now, the Gaon is assuming that they gathered together on the 13th of Adar to fast. And therefore, he identifies Yom HaKenisa, the 13th of Adar, as the fast day, as a fast day. A fast day that is reflected in the text of the Megillah. So here we have a hint that in a Gaonic source, a century before of Nachonai Gaon, that there is a fast on the 13th of Adar. Now, the responsum continues, Zesha Shaninu Megillah Nikris. This is exactly what the Mishnah tells us when it says that the Megillah can be read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, or 15th. Namely, what is that? What does that mean? La Yoshev Betanis, it's referring to, what the Mishnah is referring to is not the permissibility of the villagers to move their Megillah reading back to the last market day so that they can have time to gather food together. It's referring to a person who wants to fast, Leyoshev Betanis, Sha'asr Leyshev Betanis B'Shabbos, because it's prohibited to fast on Shabbos. What does that mean? As we're going to see in a moment, what the Gaon here is doing is assuming that the Mishnah is actually talking about something completely different. What the Mishnah is talking about is a case where a person wants to fast the day before Purim, but Purim falls on a day when the day before Purim would be either Shabbos or Erev Shabbos, which seems to be not at all what the Mishnah is talking about. But the way, as we're going to see in a moment, that the Gaon reads the Mishnah is as follows. If Purim falls on Sunday, if the 14th falls on Sunday, so then the 13th of Adar, which is this Yom HaKehila, this Yom HaKenisa, this fast day, would be Shabbos. You can't fast on Shabbos, so you have to go back the day before that is Erev Shabbos. Can't fast on Erev Shabbos either. So you have to go back to Thursday. All right, so now you're back on Thursday, so now you're back on the 11th, right? If the 14th of Adar of Purim, and now we'll read it inside, and this is an important point. Now pay attention to something that may here be anachronistic. Shimchal Yudal Lios Be'echad B'Shabbos, as we just said, if Purim falls on Sunday, Aser Lehisanos B'Shabbos, it is prohibited to fast on Shabbos on the 13th. Ube Erev Shabbos Nami Aser, Mibnei Toreach Shabbos, you're not allowed to fast on the 12th either because it's Erev Shabbos. You can't fast on Erev Shabbos because you have to be busy preparing for Shabbos. Ela Makdimin Misanin B'Chamishi, Shu Echad Aser Ba'Adar, you fast on the 11th day, which is Thursday. Now, the Imchal Arbasar B'Shabbos, if the 14th, if Purim falls on Shabbos, then Aser Lehisanos Be'erev Shabbos, you can't fast on the 13th, which is Erev Shabbos, Mnei Tareach Shabbos, because you're getting ready for Shabbos. And then the responsum continues, She'ikar Ta'anis Slichos V'rachamim Hu, V'asi Li'emanue Mikavod Shabbos, because the primary goal of a fast day is to recite Slichos and to beg for the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this will come to detract from the enjoyment of Shabbos, which involves eating delicious foods and getting dressed up and so on and so forth. Now, what about this is anachronistic and proves that this is not referring to a contemporary practice for the writer of this responsum? Can Purim fall out on Shabbos? Why not? Because what will happen, the Gemara says, the Yerushalmi tells us, and this is Halacha Lamaisa, Purim can never fall out on Shabbos. Why? Rabbi Yossi says, because Yom Kippur will then be on Erev Shabbos. Yom Kippur can never be on Erev Shabbos. That's also why Purim cannot fall out on Sunday, because if it falls out on Sunday, then Yom Kippur will fall out on... not on Sunday. It can't be... I can't remember what the other day is, but in other words, there's a concern for Yom Kippur being on either Friday or Sunday, and as a result, Purim cannot fall out on one other day and Shabbos. Purim cannot fall out on Shabbos. This was already true in the 3rd century of the Common Era, latest 4th century of the Common Era. Certainly it was true by the time that the Gaon wrote this tshuva. So the Gaon here is interpreting the Mishnah not to reflect a contemporary practice of fasting on the 13th of Adar. Why? Because he's referring to a reality that could not have existed in his day, namely Purim falling out on Shabbos. Elamai, he's simply interpreting the Mishnah in such a way that it serves a larger goal that he has. Now, what is that larger goal? So he explains. He says, V'kavod Shabbos adif me'elef ta'anios. The honor due to Shabbos and paid to Shabbos by not fasting on Shabbos is greater than fasting 1,000 times. The kavod Shabbos de oraisa, the tainis derabanan, because the honor due to Shabbos is a Torah prescription, whereas fasting is a rabbinical prohibition. Fa'asi kavod Shabbos de oraisa v'dachi tainis derabanan, and kavod Shabbos, which is a Torah matter, comes and pushes away a simple rabbinically ordained fast day. Now, it's of note that the person who asked the question that prompted this response didn't ask anything about Shabbos, wasn't referring to Shabbos at all. The Gaon here goes out of his way to emphasize, and he interprets the entire Mishnah against its simple reading to reflect the notion that a person is not allowed to fast on Shabbos or Erev Shabbos. Why? And in fact, he seems to invent this fast on the 13th of Adar that is not in Megillas Esther, that is not in the Hellenistic period, that is not in the Mishnah, that is not in the Tosefta, that's not in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi, all for the purpose of making the point that a person may not fast on Shabbos or Erev Shabbos. And moreover, it's clear because of his discussion of the case where Purim falls on Shabbos, that he wasn't referring to a contemporary practice, a contemporary minhag to fast on the 13th of Adar. He was assuming that the Mishnah is referring to a case like that. He assumed that in the days of the Mishnah, people were fasting on the 13th. In the days of Megillas Esther, people fasted on the 13th. Why? All to make the point that a person can fast on Shabbos and Erev Shabbos. Now, why would he do this? Why would he do this? Take a look at source number 6. At this point in history, the late 8th, early 9th century, there is a fundamental tectonic shift occurring within Jewish life that fundamentally alters the course of Jewish history. And that is the shift of power, rabbinic authority, from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. We take for granted nowadays that the sole authoritative text of our rabbinic tradition, the last word on everything, is the Bavli. This was not a foregone conclusion by any means at this point in history. At this point in history, there were Gaonim in Eretz Yisrael, and there were Gaonim in Bavel. And in fact, the practices of Eretz Yisrael were spreading just as were the practices of the Babylonian Gaonim, of the Babylonian Talmud. At this point, then, there is this struggle for preeminence. And in a famous igeret, in a famous letter written by a student of one of the Gaonic yeshivas, Pirkei ben Bavoi, Pirkei ben Bavoi writes this massive letter that has since become famous, where he lays out the case for the Bavli being the sole source of authority in rabbinic tradition. And he sends this letter to the Jews of Kairouan. And he essentially addresses it to the communities of North Africa and Spain. And he makes the case to these Jews, who apparently had sort of Eretz Yisrael customs infiltrating their communities, that in fact they are subject to the halacha of the Bavli. And he proceeds to enumerate all sorts of practices that halachically he believes find their roots in Eretz Yisrael, and that he believes halachically are deviant. One of the practices that he identifies, and this becomes a theme in Gaonic literature, is as follows. V'chol ha'yoshev b'ta'anis b'shabbis, v'yasa osa k'chol b'mezid, ein lo chelek lo ba'olam hazev lo ba'olam haba. Anyone who fasts on Shabbos, and other sources refer to Erev Shabbos as well, anyone who fasts on Shabbos, and thereby treats it as a weekday, on purpose, has no portion in this world, nor in the world to come. And now notice the lashon that he uses now. The gadol inug Shabbos echad yoser mimakrev elef karbanos umi elef tanis. This should sound familiar to us from the Tanchuma. Enjoyment of a single Shabbos is greater than bringing 1,000 sacrifices or fasting 1,000 times. So it's clear that in this era, the late 8th, early 9th century, about 100 years before of Natronai Gaon, there is this polemic that occurs or that is directed at the practice that apparently is rooted in Eretz Yisrael, that originates in Eretz Yisrael, to actually fast on Shabbos or on Erev Shabbos.
So wait, where is he sitting?
Pirkei ben Bavoi. Pirkei ben Bavoi it's unclear exactly which one, but he claims to be a student of a certain Talmud of the Gaon of Sura. But he may have been a student of the yeshiva of Pumbedisa. But either way, he's a student of one of the Babylonian academies. And as such, there are some scholars who theorize that he actually was a native of Eretz Yisrael who had come to Babylonia and had there sort of imbibed the traditions of the Babylonian Talmud. But whatever the case may be, I don't think we can really know that. But the bottom line is that in this period, there is a hot-button issue at the forefront of this dispute between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, and that is whether or not it's appropriate to fast on Shabbos. It becomes clear from other sources that the practice became especially popular in the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. People would fast all 10 days of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and that would perforce include Shabbos. Pirkei ben Babai thought, and the Babylonian Gaonim apparently thought as well, that it was absolutely usher to fast on Shabbos and to fast on Erev Shabbos. Why? Because you were privileging, in so doing, some sort of rabbinical ethic or some sort of extra halachic asceticism over a bona fide d'oraisa obligation of Kavod Shabbos, of Oneg Shabbos. So in so doing, you were ignoring God at the expense of something less than a d'oraisa. It is likely for this reason that the Tanchuma interprets the Mishnah the way that it does. Because it's trying, as it's clear from its tone, the Gaon in the Midrash Tanchuma, in his Tshuva in the Midrash Tanchuma, is attempting to make the point that no matter when you read the Megillah, you may not fast on Shabbos or Erev Shabbos. We'll even allow you to read the Megillah not on Purim, to ensure that if you're fasting, you don't fast on Shabbos and Erev Shabbos. And in order to serve that end, it reads the Mishnah against the grain, against the simple meaning of the Mishnah, to postulate that there was some sort of fast day that preceded Purim that would have fallen sometimes on Shabbos and Erev Shabbos. It wasn't referring to a contemporaneous practice because it envisioned Purim falling on Shabbos, which can never happen. But it envisioned at some point, either during the days of the Megillah or during the days of the Mishnah, when people would fast on the day before Purim, and as such, we would have to encounter the issue of fasting on Shabbos and Erev Shabbos. And therefore, this Mishnah would serve as proof positive that the Tanaim themselves thought that fasting on Shabbos and Erev Shabbos was absolutely prohibited and asur. Therefore, it seems that this early source, 100 years before of Natronaigon, which is the first source that seems to mention a practice of fasting on the 13th of Adar, generated that interpretation not because it believed that there was such a practice, but because it was attempting to address a different issue, a separate issue, namely the sanctity of Kavod Shabbos. Eventually, the Gaonim took over this interpretation of the Mishnah and assumed that there was a fast day, or perhaps adapted this to the general custom that we saw earlier in Eretz Yisrael, to fast in commemoration of Esther, as we saw in Masechah Sofrim. There was at least this relatively early notion, of fasting to commemorate the fast days of Esther, that Esther fasted, and it adapted that practice, or it sort of superimposed that practice upon the fast on the 13th of Adar that had been generated for completely literary halachic reasons. That seems to me, at least, and this at Adkan the history, I think as a matter of methodology, this is the best soundest conclusion that we can come to as to the origins of Tainus Esther. In other words, from a historical perspective, and we'll get to the theology in a moment, from a historical perspective, the practice to fast in commemoration of Esther may have been an ancient one, but the specific custom of fasting on the 13th of Adar prior to Purim, in some respects, was an accident. Now, what I would like to argue now is that this accident is actually fully in consonance with the spirit of Purim, and in fact with the overarching message of Megillas Esther. What do I mean? The genesis of this practice was what? The genesis of this practice was sakana. But in particular, what sort of sakana? In other words, what was the Gaon concerned about in generating a fast on the 13th of Adar? What was he concerned about? What was he concerned to protect?
Shabbos.
Kavod Shabbos. And how does he frame that issue? He frames it as a concern over people abandoning a d'oraisa in favor of a d'rabbanan. The concern that generated a fast on the 13th of Adar was anxiety over people forgetting Torah values in favor of other values that are secondary. This is the central problem of Megillas Esther. The famous question that everybody always asks about Megillas Esther from first grade on, grade one on, is this. Where is God in the Megillah? We have Hamelach Megillas. Everybody has a Hamelach Megillah. We know that there's Hamelach. Hamelach is a Leitwort. The German word Hamelach is a Mila Mancha in the words of Gush teachers, right? The word Hamelach is a prominent theme throughout all of Megillas Esther, and that should, in the thinking of some, point to ultimate divine providence sort of laying underneath or standing behind all of the events of the Megillah, and that very well may be true, but it's certainly clear that the Megillah subtly challenges people to find God in these events. The challenge of Purim is to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is to know, is to have faith, as we all must, that God guided these events. Because a simple, cynical reading of Megillas Esther is that God is nowhere to be found here. Now, as one of my teachers once told me, no one with a soul could read Megillas Esther and fail to see God. That may be true, but that's the challenge of Purim. And in fact, Purim is the, in the thought of the Halachis, in the thought of the Rishonim and the Achronim, Purim is the Derabanan holiday par excellence. All of its origins are rabbinic, right? It's a rabbinic ordinance set about by Esther and Mordechai. All of the mitzvos that we have on Purim are Derabanan mitzvos. Mishloach Manos, Matanos Levyonim, and so on and so forth. And in fact, it's no accident that Purim, as a Derabanan holiday par excellence, has, more than any other holiday, attracted all sorts of extra halachic customs. We dress up on Purim, which has no source in the halachic literature. We do all sorts of things on Purim we drink whiskey, which has no source. In other words, even if you hold, not like Rabbeinu Ephraim, that Chayav Inish Levasume Bupuraya means that you should drink alcohol, there's certainly no reason to drink whiskey. The only heter is to drink wine. The only mitzvah is to drink grape-based alcohol products. But all sorts of customs have become attracted like a file to the holiday of Purim. The reason is because Purim is, by its very nature, a holiday that challenges people or that pushes people to expand the boundaries of halacha. In other words, Purim is a holiday that is not one of the Shalosh Regalim. It's not mentioned anywhere in Chumash. It's mentioned in one of the latest books of the biblical period. So the challenge of Purim is to recall that underneath all of the very important and crucial rabbinic layers lies HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think it's entirely appropriate that when we fast on Yud Gimel Adar, on Tainis Esther, commemorating in our own topsy-turvy way the fast that Esther and Mordechai and the Jews of Shushan observed in the days of yore in Nisan, we do so out of an original, initial, embryonic concern that we not forget a De'oraisa value, that we not forget Shabbos, that we not forget Kavod Shabbos, Oneg Shabbos. And when we fast now, Bizman Hazeh, prior to Purim, let us not forget that we do so, that we observe Purim with the understanding that it was not just the rabbis who saved us. It was not just Mordechai, one of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, who saved the Jewish people. It was not just Esther Amalka, one of the heroines of our tradition, who was responsible for our salvation. But ultimately it was, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaMelech, who was responsible for this Yom Mishteh V'Simcha. So with that, I think we can conclude, and I'm happy to report that hopefully starting with our next class, we can resume our regularly scheduled program as we welcome all of our amateur ambassadors to Israel into the fold, and as everyone returns from AVEX. So yeah.